India has evacuated non-essential personnel from the Indian High Commission in Dhaka, with the security situation getting progressively more out of hand. It's perhaps the first time that this has happened, an Indian High Commission non-essential members being pulled out of the mission since the formation of Bangladesh. Family members and others from India's consulates across several cities in Bangladesh are also returning to India at a time when there are reports of a purge taking place within the country. What exactly is the situation on the ground? We've got a fabulous panel with us. In a little while, I'll be joined by Pankaj Saran, the former Deputy National Security Advisor of India. Joining us now, Syed Badrul Ehsan. He writes for the Dhaka Tribune. We've got Professor Irfan Nuruddin, professor at Georgetown University with us. Shafqat Rabi, a Bangladeshi-American political columnist. And I'm also joined by Nadeem Kadir, a senior journalist and author in Bangladesh. Thank you all very much for being with us. Syed Badrul Ehsan, is there a purge, to the best of your knowledge, taking place within the Bangladesh Army, the Bangladesh Police, and members of and within the Awami League?
Those are the reports that we are getting, that there has been a purge. There is a purge going on.
No. So what do we mean by a purge? Are we talking about people being detained? Are we talking about people losing their jobs? Or are we talking about worse?
Not exactly. People are not being detained as such, but they are being transferred to different areas of the military. And we have a new IGP, Inspector General of Police, who's just taken over. He's met the president and he just made a statement. So I wouldn't say that the word purge here signifies some large-scale changes or radical changes. It's just a change of people in different positions, people who may have been loyal to the government that is no more there. So I think they're trying to bring a new set of people in order to ensure that security and stability return to the country, which, you know, as you pointed out, that situation is not very good at this point of time.
And what about supporters of Sheikh Hasina? I mean, are they being targeted, members of the Awami League? Are they being detained? Is there you know, sort of people avenging themselves in a sense?
Yes, they are on the run. The Awami League as a political party is clearly in a shambles. And there have been reports that in the interior of the country. Now, we basically have reports in the local media in Dhaka focusing on the urban areas, Dhaka and other cities. But the reports that we are getting from within the country is that Awami League supporters are being targeted. A good number of people have been loyalists, Awami League local leaders and political activists. They have been killed or wounded. Most of them are on the run. So the situation is not good. And in the last couple of days, which you might know, in fact, yesterday, two ministers of the former government who tried to leave the country, they were apprehended at Dhaka airport, and they were detained,
sure,
and taken into under arrest by the military.
Nadeem Kadir, what's happening in terms of attacks on minorities? We hear that temples have been attacked, the homes of Hindus in Bangladesh have been attacked. Are these sporadic incidents or is there something larger?
Thank you so much. Well, I must say that today the situation is much better as far as attacks on temples, but there were reports of attacks on churches. So it indicates it's a very planned attacks going on. But thank God that it was very bad yesterday and the day before, but today things are calmer in all the sectors. So it did happen. But now I can say quite proudly about the students that they have spread around the country and the local people, including the imams of the mosques, they are protecting the temples and churches. So that's helping because we have no police right now. You know, police are on strike.
No, that's a crisis. That's perhaps that's the biggest crisis. immediate problem.
Right.
Just hold your thoughts for one moment. Rahul Anand, a singer, a very well-known singer, somebody whose home was targeted and burnt down, has put out this emotional video and message. If we can just play out this video for a few moments, because he's got these pictures of how his house was attacked. So let's have this up full frame. Can we have that up full frame? Yeah. All right, we'll have that that message that he's got out in a little while from now, but it's devastating to see homes being targeted in Absolutely. Quite this manner. Absolutely. Professor Irfan Nuruddin, who's in charge in Bangladesh?
Well, the military is in charge for
but
right
is
now.
But is it really is my question. I mean, it could be notionally in charge, but you know, this is not a military coup that's taken place. The military was forced to get in. So this being the case, you know, who's really in charge? I mean, are there extremists in charge? There is the Jamaat in charge. Is it the opposition in charge? Khalid Azia's party in charge? Or is it the army in charge?
Well, I think of those options right now, the evidence suggests that it is the army in charge. So I appreciate your point that in a moment of crisis and chaos, what it means to be in charge is worthy of some discussion. The fact that Muhammad Yunus, the Nobel laureate, has agreed to give his name so publicly as leading the interim government, I hope, is a good sign that this is going to be a, you know, some sort of grand coalition to bring some stability back until hopefully elections can be held. I don't think that there is any evidence suggesting that the most extreme fringe elements of Bangladeshi politics are remotely in charge. And, you know, one hopes that even while they might have had their moment in the last 48 hours in, you know, sowing chaos, burning houses, attacking people, that very quickly they'll be pushed back to the fringe. The larger crisis is that history tells us, you know, empirical social science tells us that when governments fall in such a manner, it takes a long time to get back on track and to reconsolidate democracy. And so the truth is that, you know, there might be stability returning, and one prays that there is. There might be a new government that emerges, but all of that's a long way from putting Bangladesh on the track to being a stable constitutional democracy once again. The scars of such an incident are long-lasting. And the truth is, of course, that Bangladeshi democracy was really under attack over the last decade by the Awami League and Sheikh Hasina. And so a lot of the damage that has been done will now be exacerbated. Whether it can be undone over the long run will really depend on what kind of leadership Muhammad Yunus, other sensible actors within government can do. But if this is going to be a moment of settling old scores, unfortunately, I think that, you know, we have to buckle up for many years of real instability in Bangladesh.
Shafqat Rabi, Muhammad Yunus is perhaps the most well-known Bangladeshi, someone with a huge international standing, a Nobel laureate, etc., etc. But does he have the political capital to bring together disparate elements within Bangladesh who aren't necessarily attracted to his economic wisdom but seek something else?
Thank you. Dr. Yunus is probably the best candidate at the moment who can unify Bangladesh.
Why do you say
As you have seen already, the fact that he has wide acceptance among the regular people and also among the student protesters who organized this downfall of Sheikh Hasina. So they demanded that Yunus be there. And internationally, Yunus has the clout. He has the reputation for being a moderate person. He's not an Islamist. He's not a communist. He's not a outright rabid capitalist. So he has all these nice things that you need from a person to lead the nation right now. It would be difficult for somebody to accuse him of being like a radical. So that's very good for Bangladesh, very good for the neighbors like India as well.
That's something that's been accepted by different groups on the ground, by student protesters, by members of the BNP, by members of the army, that is he just an advisor, or is he potentially the prime minister or the leader of the interim government?
He is absolutely going to be the leader of the interim government. And based on some inside information that we got from different sources, seems like he is trying to put together a very strong advisor council. And he wants to lead the nation strongly. And we all have also heard from various sources that the military general, General Walker, is not interested to repeat the mistakes of Moinuddin Ahmed, who was the last 2006 general in a similar situation, which ended in a failure. So Walker also is not trying to do anything crazy right now. So I do believe that Muhammad Yunus is the right man for the right moment for Bangladesh right now.
Syed Badrul Ehsan, you know, we were talking about the police very briefly earlier on. The police, as I understand it, want some sort of an indemnity. They want some sort of a form or some sort of promise that there'll be no action taken against them for what they carried out in the last X number of weeks. Legally, that seems utterly untenable, but you can't have a country without a police force. So what's the way around that?
Precisely. The new IGP who has taken over, he's asked these policemen to join their duties within 24 hours. And you're right. I mean, policemen or any established force, any institutional force, cannot exactly put forward demands. So they have to come back to their responsibilities. But at the same time, a lot of policemen, and most policemen, are afraid of the consequences because in the last 1 month or so, the police have been accused, rightly or wrongly, of suppressing the student demonstrations. And the result has been horrendous. We have seen policemen killed in these police stations and at other places. So, but the problem here is that the way things are going in Bangladesh, we haven't had a government in Bangladesh in the constitutional sense for the last 3 days, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. And one doesn't really know what is happening, who is making all these appointments, under what authority. So these things have to be settled first.
Right.
In a modern era, in this, I would say, in a postmodern era, when a country is without a government for 3 days, that is a very difficult situation.
Yeah. Professor Nuruddin, what happens to Sheikh Hasina?
Fabulous question. I mean, unfortunately for her, it looks like she's got very few friends. The U.S. has canceled its visa for her visa. She's obviously got family here. I think there's been really banking on being able to be let into the U.K., where there are strong ties, but the U.K. seems hesitant to take her. And of course, that leaves us, India, which has been a steadfast friend to her, both on a personal and on a geopolitical level. But India unlikely wants to provide her long-term asylum, right, both for strategic reasons, it endangers the partnership with Bangladesh going forward, but also sets an unfortunate precedent. So I think, we need to have the dust settle. I suspect that she will stay in India for a bit before finally getting to the UK. I think the real question you're asking, though, is whether or not what she wants to do is lead some sort of government in exile, or whether the diaspora community, which right now I'm sure is in complete shock, begins to see the Awami League as needing to be reconstituted under her leadership from abroad so that eventually they can return to Bangladesh. This is what I meant in my earlier remarks, that I think the period of instability we're in right now is really dangerous for Bangladesh.
Sure.
Because an interim government sounds well and good. Muhammad Yunus is an incredible individual as a scholar. He's got a great reputation. But there's a small window of time in which returning to elected parliament and an elected prime minister is critical for the long-term legitimacy of Bangladesh's
Absolutely.
Institutions.
Look, I'd like to thank...
Chaos.
I'm just interrupting because we've got a story to play out as well. And I'd like to thank you all very much for joining us and trying to make sense of a chaotic situation on the ground. But we've got the story and we've got the Deputy National Security Advisor of India, Mr. Saran, the former Deputy National Security Advisor, on the India standpoint that's coming up as well.
Images of violence in Bangladesh continue to come in from Dhaka and other parts of the country. With the absence of a government or law enforcement, dead bodies continue to be found. The target, Awami League functionaries and minorities, as arson, loot and targeted attacks continue. After Sheikh Hasina's ouster, Awami League functionaries are being hunted down and killed. And attacks on Hindus have gone up in Bangladesh. The acting chairman of the Bangladesh Nationalist Party, Tariq Rahman, the main opposition party to the Awami League, returned to Bangladesh today. He has appealed for peace and said it is our duty to protect all Bangladeshis, irrespective of religion and politics, from discriminatory violence and not to harass any particular community, create division or seek vengeance. But even amidst appeals, a violent mob attacked Bangladeshi singer Rahul Ananda's ancestral house in Dhaka's Dhanmondi. Rahul's musical instruments burnt and all the furniture has been looted. His family barely managed to escape the attack and survived. Members of the Hindu community in Bangladesh have expressed concern over their future as India watches the situation with concern.
আর ওখানে কোনো পুলিশ বা কিছু সুরক্ষার ব্যবস্থা
না আসেনি? কোনো পুলিশ আসেনি না।
সবাই কি পরিবারের খুব আতঙ্কে?
আতঙ্ক আমাদের টোটাল গ্রামে মারা গিয়েছে।
আমাদের এইখানে আপাতত আমাদের সাইডে কোনো অসুবিধা হয়নি, কিন্তু আমাদের যেগুলো আত্মীয় স্বজন আছে তাদের কাছে শোনার পরে তারা একটু আতঙ্কের ভিতরে আছে। তাদের কিছু দোকানপাট লুট করা হয়েছিল কালকে রাত্রে।
কিছু আগুন জ্বালানোর ঘটনা
না ভাঙচুর করা হয়েছে, এগুলো আগুন জ্বালানোর ঘটনা শোনা হয়নি।
বারো সরকার যদি আমাদের নিয়ে আসে তাহলে আমরা এক পাও থাকবো না।
In a worrying sign, the Jamaat-e-Islami Bangladesh, which aims to establish an Islamist state, opened its office in Dhaka after 13 years.
What next for Bangladesh? Formation of an interim government, restoration of law and order, putting an end to the anarchy, chaos and violence is something that is considered an immediate requirement that should be done as soon as possible. But there are larger questions about the future of the country, the path the country will choose henceforward. What will happen to many Bangladeshis who've considered themselves an integral part of the country but find themselves in the minority now and have come under attack? What happens to their future? With camera person Aniruddha Tripathi at the Petropol Benapol border on the India Bangladesh international boundary in West Bengal, Saurabh Gupta, NDTV.
Non-essential personnel, families, children, the elderly from the Indian High Commission in Dhaka have been asked to go back home. They've come back home, in fact, and we're in the process apparently of doing that with our consulates as well. What does that say about the security threat that Indian nationals face in Bangladesh presently?
Well, obviously, it is part of the overall uncertainty in the entire country and in Dhaka. I'm not sure whether Indians are being targeted yet. Hindus are being targeted, but I don't think Indian nationals really face any threat. Of course, there is a travel advisory, which is always issued as a preemptive measure. But I have yet to see any evidence of specific targeting of Indians. And I'm sure the interim military chief will be taking all precautions to ensure this does not happen. A lot of this is more precautionary in nature. I don't think we can deduce from that that there is any targeting. But obviously, we cannot take any chances. I mean, that's clear. Whether Indians inside Dhaka or in the country, or for that matter, along the 4,000-kilometer long border.
The fact that the police are not operational at all, they've stood down, they've been on a strike, as it were, saying that they need some sort of amnesty from legal action in the future. Does that not add to the overall chaos? And again, as a result of that, potentially a greater threat to Indians, including the High Commission personnel?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I think it's quite evident by now that we are going through a very, very difficult phase of, if I may use the word, a breakdown of the machinery that is in charge of ensuring law and order in Bangladesh. And in such a scenario, everyone has to be extremely careful, particularly Indians. The police establishment is particularly hit because of all the events of the last few weeks. It appears to be a breakdown in the police establishment. They've appointed a new chief. I'm not quite sure whether the students have gone back fully, whether the authorities have been able to re-establish order on the streets. So in such a situation, it is best to be cautious rather than to take any risks. And I just hope that we do not make things worse or do not create panic among the Indian community in Bangladesh. I'm sure that our embassy and consulates are in touch with the Indian community in Bangladesh, who have been settled there for many, many years. Sure. I mean, they contribute to the economy.
Mr. Saran, there are some reports which are indicating a rail purge taking place in Bangladesh. I'm not sure if it's violent by nature, though there have been some reports of killings. But certainly ministers in the old government, the Sheikh Hasina government, have been detained already. There is a lot of action against supporters of Sheikh Hasina. Some reports have suggested that 20 party leaders in the Awami League have been killed as well. A purge in the army which is taking place, and also in the top leadership of the police. Is that a matter of huge concern? Because in as much as this is a movement for change, it also implies a certain lack of stability right now.
Oh, yes. I mean, absolutely. I mean, we had all, looked at what could be the possible scenarios of a post-Hasina dispensation. And we are actually living through those moments right now. And retribution and revenge was clearly one of the aspects that had been thought about as a possible scenario. And that's exactly what we are seeing. So it is very unfortunate, but something which had been gamed by security planners everywhere, including in India. So this was a fear that we had. And it appears that some of it, I'm not sure about the scale, but the news is coming in of such revenge, retribution, old enmities playing out, some atrocities, and so on. That is why it is critical for the army to actually assert itself and show that it is in control of the situation. That, I think, as that is the primary objective as we speak.
Right.
All other things will follow. But restoration of law and order is the immediate top priority.
Mr. Saran, it's interesting that you mentioned that this is a scenario which even Indian planners, and presumably that would include you, had gamed. Had you informed, or had the government at some level informed Sheikh Hasina and her top leaders that this is a scenario that she could face?
Well, not in that sense, in the sense of you, the way you put it. But clearly, if you look at the history, and we have to learn lessons from the past history of Bangladesh, the history of Bangladesh has basically been one of the winner takes all. So whoever is in power, and we've had four or five different kinds of governments in the last 50 years, whoever takes power is succeeded by someone whose first attempt has always been, historically speaking, to settle scores with the preceding administration. Hmm. And this time, again, it seems it is no different. And this has been one of the structural problems of governing Bangladesh. We only hope that with the passage of time, there is greater maturity among the institutions, that there are greater checks and balances. But this tendency to take revenge and settle political scores with the preceding administration has in fact been a fairly steady and a constant hallmark, and which is what explains the turbulence in the Bangladeshi political history of any changes in government, any transfer of power. Rarely has it been peaceful and orderly. This time around, it is worse than before, but it is not as if we have not seen this happening in the past. In fact, in the past, I would say, we have seen much worse, if you can argue, in terms of assassinations, coups, yes, counter coups. This unfortunately is, and this is why we say that, you know, what we should try and do, and everyone should try and do, is to help countries build up their institutions so that they are resilient and they show maturity.